And now we return to a story that captivated our attention a little less than 2 years ago. It was late March 2003, 3 days into Operation Iraqi Freedom, when several members of the Army's 507th Maintenance Company were captured by Iraqi forces loyal to Saddam Hussein. Among them, Army Specialist Shoshana Johnson. That same day, Ms. Johnson's face became one of the earliest and more indelible images of the war after she and her fellow captives identified themselves on Iraqi television. Little was known about these POWs for the next 3 weeks, even as Baghdad fell to U.S. forces. Then, on April 13th, the good news. The American POWs had been found and were coming home. The next time the world saw Shoshana Johnson, she was being escorted to a transport plane that would return her to safety. For the past month, Shoshana Johnson has been touring the country to talk about her experiences as America's first black female POW, and she joins us today. If you have questions for Shoshana Johnson, our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK, and you can email us, TOTN at NPR.org. And Ms. Johnson, thanks very much for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
On that day, when the incident occurred, when the capture took, what was it like to surrender?
It was kind of terrifying. I didn't make the decision. Sergeant Riley did.
Mm-hmm.
He felt we had really no way of defending ourselves. Our weapons had gone down. Basically, it was either that or die. So I really had to give myself over to his command. And it was difficult. You know, that was the last thing that entered my mind, because you don't know what's going to happen.
Remind us how you got into that awful fix.
Well, you know, there's still a lot of discrepancy on how we ended up in an azaria before the Marines did their advance.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it was played down to down communication. We had lost communication with the rest of our convoy. There was a lot of things going on, you know.
The usual thing we heard was that your part of the convoy, your group, took a wrong turn.
Well, because there was two paths that were being taken. We ended up on the Marine Corps path instead of the Army path, basically. It was still a route that was being used by the military. We just ended up with the wrong group.
And when did you first realize you were under attack?
It was kind of odd. You hear, like, rocks hit. It just sounds like rocks hitting a windshield when you start hearing the gunfire. You know, your stomach turns upside down, and then, you know, basically all that basic training, all them drill sergeants yelling at you, it automatically starts to replay in your head, and you start doing, you know, it becomes automatic.
So what did you do?
Basically, after we got ran off the road, we tried to find out where the firepower was coming from so we could return fire, keep ourselves covered. You know, at that point was when I saw PFC Patrick Miller come running alongside the truck. I kind of nicknamed him my Redneck Rambo because, you know, he has that deep country twang. But it's amazing to me that him and Sergeant Riley basically ran on about a quarter of a mile, maybe a half a mile, bullets flying, and never got a scratch on them. You know, Miller took up a fighting position and defended our area. It's really amazing.
When did you get shot?
Actually, it was like right after, you know, Sergeant Riley got there. Fire was coming from everywhere. He told us to take cover. Basically, get underneath the truck, low crawl, take cover underneath. And as soon as I dropped to take cover, I got shot. And it's still unbelievable to me that Miller and Sergeant Riley ran all this way, didn't get a scratch, and I basically didn't move 2 feet from my truck and got shot.
The 3 weeks of captivity, of course, there's no way for you to know that it's just going to be 3 weeks.
Hello?
Yeah, there's no way that you could have known it was just going to be 3 weeks. At some point, when did you find yourself in Iraqi custody, and how did they treat you?
It wasn't, I mean, the firefight, I think, you know, it goes by fast when you think about it, but I think it ended up lasting about an hour, hour and a half,
mm-hmm.
And I ended up in Iraqi hands. You know, at first they didn't realize I was a female, so their treatment was pretty rough. But once they realized I was a female, I was separated, and I was received medical care. I was shown kindness and some respect. There were some guards who were not as kind, but then there were some that interceded on my behalf. I think I was pretty lucky. The guys did not get as good treatment as myself. And I'll never really understand why. Was it because I was a female? Was I because I was black? Because I was a black female? I don't know. But I'm just thankful for it.
You said you were surprised at the medical attention you received.
Yes, I was. You know, when you first get injured, you're thinking you're going to be the last one to be taken care of. They're going to take care of their own before you. But from the moment I got captured, a doctor tended to me, cleaned my wounds, gave me antibiotics.
It saved your leg, if not your life.
Yes, because it was about a couple days after that, we were actually taken to a hospital. Specialist Hudson, Specialist Hernandez, who were also shot, we were all taken to a hospital. Our wounds were cleaned out. And if they hadn't done that, we would have definitely developed infections. I could definitely have lost my leg. Hernandez could have lost his arm. And Hudson had 3 bullets in his back. So death would have been imminent if he didn't receive proper medical attention.
Another thing you've said, a doctor told me they wanted to take good care of me to show that the Iraqi people had humanity.
Yes. One of them did. One of the doctors did say that.
Let's get some listeners involved in the conversation. I'm sorry, didn't mean to cut you off. Did you have something else to add?
No problem. Okay. I'm
done. All right. Now let's get some listeners involved in the conversation. The number, if you'd like to join us, is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. And let's begin with Ken. Ken's calling from Phoenix, Arizona.
Hello. How you doing, Ms. Johnson?
Oh, I'm fine. Thank you.
Good. I want to ask you, what do you think about the progress of the war? As it stands right now, and do you think the U.S. should withdraw from Iraq?
What was the last question? Do I think Bush should withdraw from Iraq?
The U.S., he said,
should withdraw.
I think we could have done a better job. We have one of the finest militaries in the world. We are so advanced. We should have had several different plans. You know, if Plan A didn't work, we should have had Plan B. And if Plan B didn't work, we should have had Plan C. Basically. So I think we could have done better. At this point, we cannot withdraw just like that. It would cause chaos. But I believe now that the Iraqi military is being trained, we could slowly withdraw. I believe General Powell, and I'll always refer to him as General Powell because of the military, has an excellent plan for a withdrawal. He's been at both ends of it. He's been the soldier and he's been the politician. And I think we should really pay attention to what he has to say.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks for the call, Ken.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk now with Arlene. Arlene's calling from Salem, Oregon.
Yes.
Hi.
Yes, ma'am. My name is Arlene Walters. I am the mother of Sergeant Donald R. Walters, who was a cook with the 507th Maintenance Company, and He was I'm getting feedback here. I guess I should turn this down.
Yeah.
Just 1 second here. He was Shoshana Johnson's supervisor, and Donald, for a long time, we did not know what happened to him. He was, his truck was shot up. His driver was picked up by Miller and Riley, who were later captured with Shoshana, and, we found out last April that Donald was taken POW by 6 Fedaheens who guarded him all day with M16s. He was taken into a building, told to face the wall. They stood 20 feet from him, shot him in the back, and killed him. I don't want to give out too much information. This is still under investigation. But, yes, he was deliberately taken, and he was killed. And it was a DNA match. They know it was him. But I've wanted to talk to Shoshana for a long time, you know. But I don't know. She worked with him.
Hmm. Do you remember Sergeant Walters?
Yes, I remember Sergeant Walters very well. We never knew exactly what happened to Sergeant Walters.
That's what I thought.
I never, after, you know, things started to happen in the convoy, I didn't see him again. I never saw him again.
Well, it took a long time. In fact, they came here to our house in, oh, my goodness, last May. He was given, we went over the report, and we thought, hey, you know, this soldier that they thought was Jessica, but they got the gender mixed up. It wasn't a female. It was a male.
Jessica Lynch.
Looking at the reports and everything, you would know It was Donald. So it was investigated, and Donald was given the Silver Star for what he did. And then it was after that that they came here and informed us of what happened to him. But I thank God it didn't happen to the other five. But like I say, I don't know why they did this. He was captured alone, and they kept him for a day and took him in, stood him against the wall, and shot him in the back.
Ms. Walters, none of us can understand, or very few of us can understand the pain of what you went through, not only the not knowing and then perhaps even in some ways worse, finding out. But thank you very much for the call.
Thank you very much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
The situation she's describing and that you described, Shoshana Johnson, when a firefight erupts, the chaos is what once a moment ago seemed like an orderly procession, an orderly proceeding. You lose track of it almost immediately.
Definitely. You know, it's not a good thing to say, but it is, I feel it's true that this ambush was one of the few things that they planned almost perfectly. You know, as far as the Iraqi forces, they cut us off from each other. They broke us down into sections, so it was harder for us to, like, get together and defend our positions. The convoy is actually broken up in three different places. And the first part of the section actually got out of the ambush, but the rest of us were caught. It really did bother us that we couldn't figure out what happened to Sergeant Walters. During our captivity, when we are able to get together and speak, we went over exactly what we saw, and we tried to figure out who, you know, possibly made it out alive, who had not made it, and none of us could account for what happened to Sergeant Walters. And it bothered all of us for quite some time.
Shoshana Johnson, retired Army specialist. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's get another caller on the line, and this is Judd. Judd's with us from Pocatello, Idaho.
Hey, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question, Sean, is you have a rather unique perspective of being a woman in the U.S. military in combat and being wounded in that combat. What's your perspective on fully integrating combat units across gender lines? And I'll take my here.
Thanks, Judd.
At this point, why not? I mean, I was a cook. Jessica was supply. Piesta was supply. And yet we had to defend ourselves just like the infantry. We took our wounds just like the infantry, and we were taken captive just like the infantry. So why not just give us the training? The rules of war have changed, so we need to adapt according to those new rules of war.
And those lines are increasingly blurred in the U.S. military in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Definitely. It's not the same as, you know, you're across the street and you're wearing a uniform and I fire at you. You don't know who the enemy is anymore. So you have to be constantly watching what's going on around you. I think at this point there should need to be increased infantry training across the board for all soldiers. You know, there was a point where you got that basic training, and then the infantry went on for that more detailed training, and then you went off for your training as a cook, a supply sergeant.
In your case, it was as a cook. Did you handle weapons after basic training and before the time you got to Iraq?
Oh, definitely. Every 6 months we had to go for weapons qualification.
Mm-hmm.
Every 6 months. And depending on where you are stationed in the U.S., there's certain training that you do as far as live fire and things like that, in addition to your weapons qualification.
Okay. Another caller. This is Mike. Mike's with us from Charleston, South Carolina.
Hi.
Hi.
For taking my call.
Uh-huh.
I just have really just one question. I was wondering, since you've been on speaking engagements, tell me a little bit about your audience and where you're, what do you talk about with them? Are you speaking about your experiences in general, or are you speaking about, you know, your resolve while in conflict?
Basically, I've been speaking to quite a few of universities. They do advertise for the community, and sometimes parts of the community come in. I really talk about the experience in the combat, captivity, and also some of my upbringing and some of the things that I've experienced when coming back home. It's, I think... some people don't realize that I come from a military family and how that influenced my life in the military during my captivity.
I see. And I don't know if you can take another question or not. Are you able to?
If you keep it quick, Mike.
Okay, just real quick. Do you have any contact with any other members of your group that was taken into captivity now that you're not there any longer?
Oh, yeah.
Thanks for taking my call.
Keep in contact. I know one of my fellow POWs is going to be on the Amazing Race. Ron's going to be on the Amazing Race. But we definitely keep in contact. There's no one else that understands what we went through more than each other. And actually, in May, all eight of us will be getting together.
Here's an email from Ed George in Cleveland. Decades after the end of the Vietnam War, former soldiers are returning to revisit their former battlefields, in some cases meet former adversaries as part of the healing process. Do you ever think that down the road you would want to return to Iraq and possibly try to locate some of the people who were your captors or your doctors?
Maybe in about 10, 15 years. But I would definitely want to find out what happened to the doctors who took care of me, some of the guards that were so kind, I mean, went out of their way to be kind to me. I definitely wonder every day if they're alive, if they're doing well after all the kindness that I was shown.
Shoshana Johnson, you just have a few seconds left. I thank you very much for joining us. We really appreciate it. Good luck on your tour. What are you going to do next, by the way?
I have no idea.
Well, whatever it is, good luck with it.
Oh, thank you very much.
Shoshana Johnson joined us by phone. As we mentioned, she's been touring the country. Just about 2 years ago, she was taken prisoner while part of the U.S. Army maintenance group in southern Iraq. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.